tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
I love this cover of Contact. Oh my gosh. Like, if you didn't feel like crying at the end of this episode and then you heard this song, it's like, nope, I am done. That is feelings overflow. Hello, Red versus Blue fans, and welcome to the season finale for the AfterBuzz TV Red versus Blue Season 13 After Show. I am here with Megan Blue Team Salinas.
Hey guys, you can tweet at me at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin.
And we have Alexis Red Team Taurus in the booth.
Hey everybody, you can find me at ATaurus890.
And I am Katie Freelancer Cullen. You can find me on Twitter at Kiaxe. That's K-I-A-X-E-T. As always, we are checking the hashtag that is ABTV RVB, and we have two very special guests with us today. We have Miles Luna and Bernie Burns.
Hello!
Yep, that's pretty much it. That's what I'm sure the Alamo in Austin sounded like tonight, with everyone cheering like crazy. How you guys doing tonight?
Pretty good. We're doing really well. We just got done with the screening for RVB 13. It was 192 minutes. Is that right?
It was very long. 2 hours. Wow. 52. So, yeah. It's some math. I don't know.
Plus credits.
Yeah. It was like 3 hours long. And not a lot of people stopped for bathroom breaks. So, that was very impressive.
A little frightening, to be honest with you.
We've kind of been trained by movie culture not to do that. We sat through enough Lord of the Rings to live through that. So we are talking about episodes 17 through 20, All or Nothing, Great Destroyers, The End is Near, and The End. How much screaming did you get for naming them like that?
The appropriate amount of screaming.
What is the appropriate amount of screaming for that?
A lot. I guess.
Well, that is...
I mean, The End was a big debate, because, you know, every time I saw The End, it's like... I'm so gun shy about like always communicating to the audience that it's not the last episode of the series ever. But we've already been talking about RVB 14 with a lot of people, so we haven't seen a whole hell of a lot of that.
Yes, and we still have Are You Making More Red vs. Blue?
Yeah, we still have that, and still up and running. It is, right?
Yeah, no, it totally is.
Okay, I'm thinking that migrated.
And the answer is still yes.
Your number one reference site to answer that question. We have 14 and...
Yeah, the big questions we go every season is like, is there going to be more? And the answer was always yes. And the other question is, have you done that this year? It's like, are you guys going to use Halo 5 for RVB?
Oh my god, yeah. We get that all the time. We get,
People ask that question all the time. There's a new Halo game. It's like, are you going to use it? It's like, yes, we're going to probably use it at some point in the future.
We use every single map that Halo 4 had to offer. So we kind of have to.
It is nice, though, because you got a whole version of the game that you really haven't touched too much at this point. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, sidebar.
We're just going to skip this generation of Halo games. It's not important. It's not important.
We're going back to Marathon.
We're going to go back to Halo 1, kicking it old school.
Go back to Blood Gulch.
Time travel.
There you go.
We did go back to Blood Gulch for about 15 seconds during the finale. Sister and Junior are back, you guys.
That was a lot of fun. That was a fun little cameo, and having Becca back in the booth was fantastic. She, like, went right into it, picked it up, no problem, and, it was... Like, waiting for those cameos on that episode was something that was really fun. As someone that checks out the occasional reaction video online, the faces that would always come whenever Junior goes, or my sister, like, creeps out of frame, like, it's like, really fun to watch.
You give people heart attacks when you go around and like their Tumblr post. People go, oh, Miles has seen it, I'm done.
It's funny, there's cool stuff on there, so. I'm out there prowling.
Miles is vicious. Miles loves the emotional moments more than anything else.
Oh, yeah. It's those. They're fun.
We'll see him around like a Monday, you know, in the office. Like, are you excited about tonight? He's like, people are going to cry.
And I'm sure that was the lead up to today's episode. It's just like, and how many people are going to lose their noise?
Yeah, that's an episode that's been a long time coming.
A long time coming.
Yeah,
it's 13. Church's number on his shirt was 13.
Yeah.
all those years ago.
Yeah,
that 13. That was always his number, was 13. And so, it's okay to talk about spoilers. So that was one we've been talking about for a little while, Miles and I. When Miles and I work on the scripts together, but that's not even a good way to describe it. It's like we talk about major milestones in the series, mm-hmm. hash them out what we want to do, and then that's two or three moments over the course of an entire season. And then the main writer for that season, which has been Miles for the last three seasons, just is off the races from that point and does everything.
Yeah, it was back during season 11 when there was a moment where I pulled you and Matt into a room. I was like, all right. So here's how I see this going. These guys are going to be fighting these guys.
Yep.
And then it turns out that this person could be Karan Industries. And they were blindsided. And then it all ends in this war. And there's all these questions how does that even make sense? And who is this guy?
Yeah.
And we were going through all of it. And at the end of it, you walked up and you're like, I think this is actually really, really great. Mm-hmm. I've had this idea for a while. And I'm assuming it's cool that we talk about this.
Yeah.
You first came up to me and go, I have this idea on how we bring the meta back. And I was like, okay.
I think we need to take a minute to confirm that the meta is dead, because after that, people will go nuts.
No, go ahead, please.
Okay, the meta's fucking dead. Oh my god, he's so dead. He's deader than dead. We had Price say that he was dead in four different ways.
Miles
let
saying
go.
That. I'm not saying
just let go. Oh, you mess!
Bernie, you're not helping. You're really not helping.
I continue to do RVB. I have no plans on bringing back the meta.
The meta is an idea. It's philosophy.
But the idea was we would bring the meta back through under Church's control, going through the ghosting thing. And obviously that things change over the years, and we kept making slight alterations and honing in, let's actually go more in this direction, and what if Tucker were to get it, and finally come to the point where you're like, this is what it needs to be.
And there was a particular take on the Tucker getting it too, which was we talked about for a long time, but we are going to continue at some point the storyline, where we've left off. Well, I should say where we left off. We'll continue the storyline after this at some point. Might be a big long gap.
Yeah.
There might be something.
Yeah, it's funny. I have to say, there's a bunch of people that, obviously, there's whether you love the ending or you hate the ending, it was something that we were really excited about and we put our heart and soul into.
Yeah.
But one of the comments that is my favorite negative comment, which is, we got cheated out of this huge fight scene. Now we have to wait 2 years to see it. That's pretty presumptuous of you. If it's up to me, we will never see that fight ever.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That defeats the purpose. Well, you said, if we pick up with the future storyline, it'll be, who knows when it'll be.
Well, I think that, one of the things, we're just gabbing away here. About Red vs. Blue, it's a 13-year season. It's we do things all the time, or, on a regular basis, we do things that are different. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That they're different kinds of endings. You know what I mean? And within the moment, they will challenge what people think of being, as closure. But over the course of, 15 going into 20 years, that kind of thing, it's if we did every season where a clean cut or something like that, it wouldn't be as enjoyable. Yeah. It wouldn't be as unique as what it is now.
It was, when we were talking about what season 14 was going to be.
Yeah.
I remember we went to Baby A's or something. And I told you, I was like, Bernie, we do the ending that we've been planning on. It's can we do something that's not me continuation afterwards? Because I wanted that ending to resonate and just sit for a little while. And
sure.
That's where the idea of the anthology thinking about, and I'm so incredibly excited for it.
I read a comment somebody said too, it's the whole lesson of faith and having, making the sacrifice, making that based on faith. It's then the audience is in that with you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're we wrote something where we can put the audience in that experience as well.
Yeah.
Exactly what the character's going through. You
yeah.
had the same experience.
Yeah,
characters.
And faith was a really strong theme in season 13. It's, the mercenaries didn't have that, and the Reds and Blues did, and that's why in the end they kicked their ass.
Sure, Carolina needed it.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, Carolina having faith in herself, and
mm-hmm.
all throughout the...
Learning to get that, yeah.
Yeah.
And Wash having faith in the Reds and Blues. I'm a little biased when it comes to Wash, so that's something I definitely noticed. He's good at feelings now.
I like to think the reds and blues rubbed off on him. Not donut, though, and not in that way.
No, that's rubbing on.
I'm just happy that Shannon McCormick, who is the voice of Agent Washington, has progressed from essentially being a character who is very important in Reconstruction, but basically was like, let's go. All right, we're here. Let's go. And it's like, he was our...
This is what's happening.
And now we need to leave. And that was basically... the role that Washington filled for a long time. Washington's had a good run too, where he's been, you know, we went all the way back to the prequels to 9 and 10. You know, we learned about how Wash got to be where he was. Then he was this reluctant hero. Then he was a villain for a little while, and now he's like this like emotional core of the team.
Yeah, he's hands down one of my favorite characters just because of the crazy journey that he's been on and how much he's changed over the years. And he's also fun too to have in a fight because you've got that. You know, he's a badass, but I describe him as like a Nathan Drake or an Indiana Jones. It's like he gets the job done, but in his kind of own goofy, charming sort of way. And getting to see that in episode 18 was a lot of fun.
Episode 18 was so much fun. I don't understand how you can find yourself cheated out of an epic fight scene when you have episodes 18 and 19 to look at. I just don't understand the philosophy. Those were amazing.
I guess leave them wanting more is the way to go out, I suppose.
No, the epic fight definitely took place. I mean, it really did.
Yeah, the planning of that was monstrous. It was myself, Cohen, and Carmichael in a room with a bunch of whiteboards and like stick figures, and we had stats of like, this character has these weapons, at this point, this one loses this one loses that, and then the mad boots thing, it was just absurd, and it was really weird. I've never like written a fight. Like, 11 was the first time I'd ever written a fight, I suppose. And it was very different. In Ruby, we'd just be like, action goes here. but it was a really fun experience. It was really cool to learn from those guys.
We have a question from Tumblr user None I with Left York, who has one of my favorite Tumblr names ever.
We both did the same headshot. I reached.
Was this the intended ending for the trilogy from the start?
Yes.
Yeah. In broad strokes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think we've said this sometime before. Like when we started episode 11, we didn't have the firmest grasp on where it was going to go. We knew, like you said, we had our broad strokes. It crashed. Carolina Church are gone. We have this conflict at the end. But like we had aired the first episode, and we were still a little like, we thought we knew what the conflict was going to be, but we weren't 100% sure. And we had to get our act together, and we did. And what we came up with, I thought, was pretty fun.
A lot of pieces had to fall into place if we were going to do this ending. It had to be, you know, bringing back the medics' equipment, mm-hmm. so there'd be some motivation for that to happen. And I remember I thought it was pretty solid because I talked to you about it for a while, and then you came. It was pretty tied to the teaser or the trailer, I guess, that we did for season 13. Yeah. Where it's Church's monologue, where some of those files he recorded tonight, we already heard what those sound like, because that was the trailer for RVB-13, some of those files. And so once you said, okay, let's record that, I was like, okay, we're going in that direction, then I knew that we were going to use that then.
Yeah, it was, I remember you, it was in the middle of season 12 when you had the idea to actually put that message in a trailer. I was like, that sounds great, we should totally, let's do that. And then, you wrote the trailer, and we were getting down the line. We were like, "Hey, Bernie, I know you want to write the trailer. Let's get those lines." And when you finally sent it to me, all I responded back was, "Dude, goosebumps." It was really a fanboy in me. Was like, "Oh, we're going for it. Let's do it."
Well, and we're so used to red versus blue trailers lying through their teeth that this one actually coming through was like, "Oh, that actually happened."
Surprised, yeah,
a little bit, yeah.
It came through. This question came up in the Q&A that we just did here at the Draft House, which was there ever a point where you thought maybe you would do something other than that ending? And I said, yeah, it was the moment I finished writing episode 19. Like, episode 19, before the chairman shows up, the good guys win, everybody's happy, those assholes got thrown off a cliff, and the other one left. Like, everything was great. And there was this moment where I was just like, it could end right here and everything. It would be the happy storybook ending, and it was.
Yeah.
I love Church. So it was like this could be it, and you know, after a while, it's just like, no, this is it needs to be the episode 20 ending. I think push forward with it.
You know, from a writing perspective, there's been so many other shows that have started and stopped while Red vs. Blue has been going. And the way that those shows are written is, has affected me and my approach. I don't know if it has you, but like shows like Lost, you know, they started and stopped while we were making Red vs. Blue. And I watched what, you know, that show went through where they had a storyline. You know, they didn't know when their show was going to be canceled or when it was going to end. So all of a sudden they're writing an open-ended story without realizing it. And one thing I've always been proud of with Red vs. Blue is that we've always like had points in the storyline where it's like people can have that conversation, go, okay, that's good. That's enough for me. Mm-hmm. This is a really good place to stop. This is a jumping off point for me. I'm really happy with this. And likewise, you know, as, you know, our audience gets older and, you know, younger people are coming up, we also give great points for people to jump on as well, you know, to join in. I think season 14 will be a great one for that.
Yeah.
In particular. But I was like, we give people, like, points like 13, 10, 5, mm-hmm. you know, even 6 in a way.
Yeah.
You know, you can drop off and have a very complete story.
Absolutely.
I think Reconstruction is probably the only thing, at least for me, that I approached as being a standalone story, that you could just watch that one and that was it. You know, it didn't have any connection to anything around it necessarily.
Yeah.
Everything you need to know is contained in that story.
Yeah, obviously if you watch everything up to there, it's a little more rewarding, but yeah, it's totally standalone.
Yeah.
I never thought about that.
Yeah.
I mean,
the way one ends.
Yeah.
And one ends with like the ship blowing up with text, spoiler. you know, and then it's like, and then, well, you know, I mean, that's five. The way five ends.
Right.
It blows up like text.
Yeah.
And the way one ends is text gets hit in the tank, Church goes running after her, and the guys just head home to the base. You know what I mean? I mean, that's the way one ends, so.
I honestly had not considered that.
Oh, I believe we have a question from the live chat.
We do.
So it's from, hold on, let me get my handy dandy phone out here. It's from GL Wasser. It's, how many people are involved in the writing process? Just you two, or do you have a writing brain trust?
For those of you listening on iTunes, Bernie's just pointing at Miles.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, I wouldn't say there's a writing team, would you? I mean, there's a few people that we trust.
Yeah, we approached PSAs differently this season. We had Carrie and Gray work on the PSAs with me chiming in and serving as, serving the way you helped me in season 11 as kind of a voice of guidance or whatever, punch-ups and stuff, and that worked out great. I thought they did a fantastic job. Sarge too, Sarge Harder was like, I love her. There's definitely people that we trust. Like I'll finish an episode and, I'll always send it to Matt and Bernie for any notes or, ideas. And then there's also like the usual people I'll go to are Carrie, Gray. I'll go to Barbara. Barbara's opinion I value incredibly, just because she's been such a long time fan, and she doesn't fuck around. She'll just tell you what she thinks.
Nico, who's in the music for a long time, is a great person to bounce ideas off as well.
Yeah.
And then Eddie Rivas, who's been an on again, off again writer for Red vs. Blue, and he was a big contributor. I would say the primary contributor to the Red vs. Blue book, which is coming out in a few months.
I'm super excited for that. The timeline.
You're going to be really disappointed.
At this point, we're just happy with anything. And at this point, we should probably actually swing into the episode recap, unless there's a question from Twitter that we wanted to bring in.
I do have one from Alex on Twitter. He or she wants to know, given that it's been 13 years, what has been your guys' favorite Church/Epsilon moment?
Well, mine's still the end of season 5, Church's monologue about why you should hate people. Don't just hate someone because you're told to. Hate them because you see them every day and they're a complete douchebag. Like, that, I thought was not only just a great message, but it was done in just the perfect RVB way. You know, it was like, it's a nice moral, but said with tons of profanity and snark, and that's my favorite.
Recently, was it episode 11, the I don't know moment, when he doesn't know what he does at 11? Yeah, I really liked that one a lot. I felt like that was, like, for Church, that was the pivot for him, like, for the season. I'm just like, the guy who always thinks he knows at least what he's going to do next, and he just doesn't know, and that's, like, leading down this trail toward his final solution in the finale of the season. But I think probably my favorite is less of, like, a Church or Epsilon one and more of the original Church, Dr. Brother Church, the director, was the very last bit of reconstruction because it took so much effort to write a story where literally the last word of the story is the twist. Like, so you have to get all the way to the last word of the last sentence to get that twist delivered, and then it's over. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was,
yeah.
It was tough to craft that. And also to guide people away from that the entire time.
Oh, yeah. Because now, everybody, yeah, once you come online, it will be deconstructed and talked mm-hmm. about, and everybody has their theories, and it's people are smarter.
Yeah.
As much as we make fun of the internet for being so dumb, there are a lot of very intelligent people on it.
And we always avoided that, like, up until season 6 when we went back to it. I don't know what made me go back to doing that, but, like, when we did episode, or season 1, by, like, episode 12, somebody had written, I read a post where they'd written the rest of the season.
Jeez.
I was like, oh my god. And it's like, dang. So then we just, because, you know, Tex was a guy, and then was a girl, you know, and the person figured that out, mm-hmm. and everything, it was like, I thought you couldn't have twists online because somebody would figure it out. But then by the time we got to 6, I felt like it was we were sophisticated enough that we could actually pull something off, and I was happy that we did.
Yeah, it's a good moment, right?
It was pretty dang good. Right, let's actually talk about the episodes now. I actually want to talk a good bit about 17 because I know in this chunk of 4 episodes it gets glossed over a little bit because we have the fight and the betrayal and that ending. But I really want to talk about Kimble. I want to talk about her speech, and I want to talk about how this was the moment where it turned out that the army could win the war. Because before then, they were shattered, and Doyle just died in an extremely heroic fashion that absolutely murdered all of our feelings. But nonetheless, and she comes out with a speech about how she initially didn't think that the truce would work because you have to dehumanize your enemies in a war, because if your enemies are human, then what does that make you for fighting them, for killing them, for doing what they've done? And I wrote down the last line because I will forever love this last line is, fight to see Malcolm Hargrove locked away for the rest of his life. Fight to wipe that stupid grin off of Felix's face. Fight because you deserve to fucking win. And that's a direct quote, so, yeah.
That episode was one of the hardest episodes to write because it's like, yeah, that's your low point. It's like, how in the hell do you pull your heroes out of that, especially when they don't want to be heroes? They just, you know, everything sucks. And that script went through a ton of different versions. And I know I always considered What Do You Fight For? Just my spin on Why Are You Here? Like, it's the same question, but just phrased differently. And, you know,
those are all your taglines for the teaser images.
Yeah. And that episode is one of my favorite because of the music. Like, Nico and Dave had, as usual, the craziest of deadlines standing above their heads. And Nico had this idea. He said, hey, what if we used Half-Life, which is personally, like, one of my favorite songs that he's ever made. And, I mean, I used it all over season 12. And to both of us, that actually has a really, like, there's a real personal meaning in it. And he suggested it, and I remembered how we used Far Away for the trailer with David's added strings and percussion and stuff, and how well it turned out. So I said, you know what? If you believe this is a good idea, then spend the time on it, develop it, and let's see what happens. And they came back with that track, What We Fight For. And they just sent me the audio, and it was an MP3 with Kimball's speech and then the music behind it. And I straight just, like, cried in the break room like a little girl. It starts off so sad and then becomes this beautiful, like, somber, I don't know how to describe it, but it kills me every time I hear it. And Lindsay's performance was just, like, that was a long session, and she nailed it. She's incredible. She's incredible.
Especially that last line that you just read. Mm-hmm. You know, the emotion that she had to, like, as well is fantastic.
As Maggie and Clayton, I was standing on the other side of the booth shouting, just like, what are we going to do? And she's like, we're going to fucking win. And, like, it was like, I'm sure, like, the cubicles just outside the booth were just working the day, like, god damn, we get it. Like, oh, man, shut up.
Go fucking win.
But yeah, I know, like, war is this unbelievably complex thing, and, like, the fact that even trying to address it in this web series was a scary thing to do, because there's never one-sided wars, and there's all these different reasons as to why people fight. But I don't know, I think it was just this moment where it's kind of like there was a lot of things that kind of call back to Carolina's line about you shouldn't let the past define who you are. It's just a starting point for who you're going to be, which was what I refer to with locus. That's a whole other tangent.
we'll get to that.
But it was kind of this, like, just for once, could we please just cut the bullshit and come together for this one thing that isn't even like we're going to fight for our survival. No, fight for more than just survival. You survive every day. Reach for more. Reach for things like, yeah, wiping Felix's grin off of his face. It's like, don't just fight to live. Fight to fuck that guy over because he's an asshole. Like, that was just go for something more. Go for more. Go for what you deserve. And I don't know. I've just been rambling for a bit, but it was really difficult thing. And it took a lot of pieces coming together, and I think it turned out pretty darn good.
Well, and we needed those pieces to come together in order to set the stage for the next three episodes, because if they couldn't come together, that's it. That's the war. We're done. So
And I'll never forget watching FTX with everybody. I was really nervous. I almost didn't show the episode, just because I wasn't sure, like, you know, you go to a panel, you want to, like, laugh and have a good time and stuff, and it's a pretty real episode.
Yep.
So we ended with it, and I couldn't believe it when we got to the part of the speech about Felix. People just started clapping before the speech was even done. And then when she said fight because you deserve to fucking win, the crowd exploded, and it was like they were there on the planet and were like there and part of that group of people. And I just, it was so unbelievably overwhelming. I couldn't believe it.
We were actually in that panel watching that, and there's always something magical about seeing an episode with everyone who is there for that exact same reason. It's just, it's amazing. So yeah,
so that's... Miles, it's nice to know how much people hate your character.
It's so much fun. I love playing this guy.
One of the best comments I read, I know we're not in episode 20 yet, but one of the best comments I read so far is, well, Church died the way he lived, calling himself a hero.
Alexis, where's the applause sound effect? I think we need that again. Because, dang. Whoever wrote that, Lord. You are a good person, and people say nice things.
There we go.
Yeah. And people say nice things about you. And the one other thing we really needed in this episode is the setup with Locus and Felix. And Locus has been having doubts all throughout the season, and they don't quite come to a head in 17. They don't really come to a head until 19, but he's having very much doubts about Felix, about his already questionable morals, and killing everyone else on the planet that they've been partnered with. And Felix is just, nah, trust no one, except you, trust you. But not those guys. Whatever.
I mean, those guys are murdering monsters, right?
If that's not a warning sign, yeah. Don't trust anybody, except me. Everything's great. Hey, let's get some popcorn.
The demotivational poster with the chain that's breaking, and it's like one link is just stretching, and it says, the only common thing in all of your failed relationships is you.
I've seen that, and it applies. I want to dig into Locus and Felix here, because I'm on Tumblr, as most of you know, and this has been a huge point of contention ever since episode 19. Because, surprise, surprise, Felix is a true monster. He really doesn't care. And we find out that Locus is what he is afraid of, and that he has been manipulating Locus from day one. And you kind of have to approach this from two sides. You have Felix, who, for him, power is everything. He wants to be in control of the situation, in control of other people, in control of everything. And so when he starts losing, when Tucker gets the better of him, when Wash and Carolina crash a spaceship on him, he's losing control of the situation and therefore losing control of himself. And you can see it. You can see it in the way he moves. You can see it in... He just starts calling people losers, and I'm not tired. You're tired. Thank you, Felix, you child. And we see him lose control,
yeah,
and Locus
has some issues.
You don't say.
Watching him unravel throughout the course of the season, I thought was something that was pretty satisfying. Especially the fact that he is brought down by the reds and blues. Of all
oh my
people.
God! Yes,
just felt really fitting because it's him. Like when like there was this saying that was like the higher up you are on the ladder, the more people can just see your ass. It's like at the top, like he's exactly where he has always wanted to be. He's A, number one. There's no other person that is his equal, blah, 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 blah. But that leaves him completely and utterly alone at the end. And because of it, he's beaten by these idiots.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the thing that I wanted to do with Locus and Felix from 11 was introduce them on one end of the spectrum and then have them completely switch by the end of it all. We introduced Locus as the biggest, scariest dude. Like, we wanted him to rival the meta in terms of, like, intimidation level. Like,
he's designed that way.
Yeah. Yeah, the big voice and, like, the no eyes on the helmet that has a skull shape, and he's great with every weapon and just kills you without thinking about it. And then Felix comes in and is like, whoa, the laughable, oh, he's kind of a dick, but you love him. And then there's the turning point in season 12, and especially towards the end of season episode 18, where up to that point we thought, oh, yeah, Felix is just this greedy douche. He's, yeah, he's kind of a jerkwad, whatever, what a sleazeball. And then you realize when he's messing with Tucker, it's like, it's not about the money. Like you said, it's about the power. Like he gets off on just like on that feeling of being able to be in complete control and be better than everybody else. And you start to realize, this dude is bonkers.
And I think a great like milestone for their progression was the very first episode of this season when they go get Sharkface on the prison ship. You know, and it's just like, it's this horrible plan. It's like this plan they put in place to basically eject people out of space.
Yeah.
This horrible plan. And then you get a sense by the end of it that Felix is very much like the guy driving that thing.
Yeah, yeah. And it becomes more and more throughout the season. Like, he's the one that is talking for the both of them. And he's the one, as soon as Locus has a doubt, he puts his hand on his shoulder so he uses those trigger words like, hey, don't forget your orders, partner. We're in this together forever.
Dance, puppet, dance.
Yeah. And it's just like, and it's all the little things. It's just knowing what Locus is obsessed with his idea of perfection and being the ultimate weapon, and knowing what makes Locus tick is like what he has always had over him and what he can always play off of whenever he needs to. And just the idea of losing control over Locus and Locus finally becoming self-aware enough to realize that this isn't where he was supposed to ever be in his life. That is just the most worst case nightmare scenario for Felix, is the day that Locus realizes he doesn't need him.
Yeah.
And it's his own doing. When in his frustration is unraveling, when he's just trying to get Locus to do what he wants him to do, he tells him, just fuck the orders, man. Who cares? And shouldn't have done that.
I'm not doing this for anyone else. I'm doing this for me. And at that point, he gives Locus the tools to realize, wait a minute, this isn't right. And Santa telling him, you've been broken by war, and Felix kept you that way. This is not a partnership. This is a very abusive relationship. And Felix Felix doesn't have to be the perfect manipulator, not the whole time. He just has to come halfway and support Locus's lies of, oh, you were following orders. Oh, you're a weapon. Oh, it's okay. It's okay. We're just following orders. You're good.
Yeah.
And Locus wants to believe that.
Yeah, Locus is incredibly delusional, and his whole thing that Wash calls him out on in 12, which is that he just keeps making excuses for his behavior. Like, he's actively making these terrible, terrible decisions, but he always has the excuse of, I was just following orders, oh, I'm just a soldier, blah, blah, blah. And Felix is just there to reinforce all those ideals, and whenever he starts to stray away, just nudge him back on. It was never like Locus was brainwashed or anything. It's just Felix is, you know, he's the kids that your parents don't want you to hang out with when you're young.
He's the bad influence.
Yeah.
He's the bad crowd.
Yeah.
Fell in with.
Yeah.
Locus had cigarettes.
Through the helmet.
Through the helmet.
Next season, there's going to be an after school special about hanging with the wrong crowd.
And I'm Felix from the popular web series Red vs. Blue. You may recognize me as the guy who went over a cliff last season.
I will say my favorite part prior to their split is during the fight with Agent Washington.
Yes.
And Wash is calling him out on it. And as you mentioned before, the first thing Felix does is put his hand on his shoulder and say, partner. And then the next thing, when they're separated and it's just Wash and Locus one-on-one, that Locus called out for him. Like, the second he started doubting
Locus
himself, he's like,
knife.
Help me.
Locus has a knife in Wash's face and the size advantage, and Wash is telling him, yeah, killing me won't make you feel better. It's just going to prove me right. And Locus goes, ah, Felix.
Yeah. Deal with this thing, please.
It's like, I can't do it.
I'm having
I can't
feelings
do it.
Again.
I'm having emotions. Help me. So yeah, and oh my god, when did Wash become a master manipulator? When did that happen?
Horrible duo to play around with for these last three seasons, and I love them to death for being just terrible.
So I need this confirmation, and I think half the fandom needs this confirmation because we've been seeing this around a lot. Felix is totally super dead, right?
So I gotta say, when I first told Bernie how I wanted to kill Felix, he goes, we've thrown people off cliffs before. They're gonna think he's alive. So the trade-off was, given the rule, the way the sword functions, if we see the sword light up when someone else picks it up, then that has to mean that Felix is dead. So that was our not so subtle way of trying to say, hey, he's dead. But in case you didn't pick up on that, he's dead. He's so dead. He got Disney'd hard.
Like, yeah, the dude's dead. Yeah, I said to Miles one point. He said, we were talking about the cliff idea. I was like, well, if you could make like all of his limbs fly off, that would probably, and then he explodes. That might be the only way people would believe.
Yeah, that. Yeah. I didn't have him get completely incinerated by the frag, just because I remember watching when I was younger. I saw one of the Saw movies where like you realize there's this one person that was evil the whole time, and the way that character dies, they just get shot, and I was like. The awful person inside me was like, that character didn't suffer enough. The realization of his defeat, the weight, and then the horrible fall all the way down. Just give him a few seconds to let it sink in, just how much he fucked up. He needed to die in the worst way.
Well, and not even just, okay, he's been shot, whatever, not having him die in the heat of battle, but having him lose control of the situation when that was all he wanted. Over the course of two episodes, having him completely fall apart and then die. Beautiful.
Yeah. He needed to go through a lot. And it was really fun getting to play that. It was cool just getting to like shout and be crazy in the booth.
Yeah, it's one of the things like when, you know, another show that I think was really popular from Jordan was The Sopranos. Mm-hmm. And I think people were always waiting to see Tony Soprano like have his big ball. It was like five or six seasons of following that character. And then by the end of it, you're like, I don't know if I want to see this guy fall or not. But Felix, there was no question. You want to watch him just like all of his things work against him and just lose it and unravel it. And then he loses control because that's the way it works.
Yeah.
It's like Cersei in Game of Thrones.
And I have to bring this up because I'm proud of myself. Jay Blue Eyed Stares on Tumblr pointed this out to me that she had been watching a past AfterBuzz episode. And then I'd said something about not wanting to hit Felix, but wanting to throw him off a cliff.
Ah, yeah.
Okay. Past Katie.
You're psychic.
Past Katie likes her Disney deaths. Evidently, the chat is saying 57 over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. We never talked about it on the DVD commentary, and we were supposed to. So I guess now's a better time than ever to talk about 57. It's
After
been a well-guarded secret. 57... is the world's strangest coincidence.
Okay.
So it all started with there was like a number on the screen in the TARDIS that was like the hole is at 57% something or another,
yep.
And then Aiden Price says Caroline is 50% more likely to neglect their teammates. So I chose the number 57 for Price just because it seemed like a good number. And then Patrick was designing all of the screens. And apparently Patrick just decided 57 also happened to be a good number, so he just put that there. And then apparently in season 12, Caboose's lucky numbers are 5 and 7, don't forget them. It was just coincidence after coincidence after coincidence, and people assuming that the season was going to be 19 episodes long, it would end up in episode 57 in the Chorus Trilogy.
Right.
It just snowballed into this thing, and as soon as we realized it was a thing,
yeah.
We just wanted to fuck with people. It was so much. The greatest moment was when there was a day where somehow we accidentally uploaded episode 1 with our frame count in the export. And we're like, oh, that's not supposed to be up. We swapped it out. But before we took it down, someone went through and got a screen grab of the 57th frame of every shot. And they're like, what does this mean? And I'm sitting there going, it means you've got a lot of time on your hands.
So this was a case of the fandom just eating itself and you guys getting popcorn
so,
and watching us go.
57, it was all in your head the entire time. Need to bring it to you.
And that's an AfterBuzz exclusive, you guys.
Yeah, you're welcome for that. We'll see you on episode 57.
And on that note, let's talk about iTunes for a minute.
Sounds good.
We love your iTunes reviews. You are wonderful people, and we absolutely love your feedback. So if you go on iTunes, like, comment, subscribe, tell us you love us, rate us 5 stars, because When you do that, it lets all of our wonderful bosses here at the station go, hey, they really like these people talking about multicolored soldiers stuck in a box canyon. Let's have them do that. And let's have them talk about the teams of fighting girls. And let's have them talk about the hilariously incompetent superheroes there. We have Ruby and X-Ray and Vav shows too, you guys. Hey. So when you leave us reviews and tell us that you like us, then that lets our bosses know that covering Rooster Teeth stuff is a good thing, and they let us keep doing that. And, you know, it keeps the lights on in the studio, it brings in advertisements, all of that good stuff. And if you leave reviews, we read them on air.
When was the last time we had a show?
4 weeks ago?
What date was that?
August? Early August?
Well, we have a couple comments that just say, great podcast, 5 stars from Pyrotechnic, Ruby.
Oh, Pyrotechnic. Hi.
Ruby STLY and,
Ruby Sleigh.
Yeah, Jiro1331. You guys left 5-star ratings, and they're all actually pretty long comments about how much you really like and appreciate the show. You guys are awesome.
You
so
are
thank
good
you
people,
so much.
And people say nice things about you. And we have a giveaway.
Yay!
I don't know if you guys can see this. Bernie, I know you can't see this, but it came from you. This is the Comic-Con name tag signed by Bernie during the Rooster Teeth panel. Yeah.
Right, I was there.
Yeah, I asked you, it was in July. It was a long time ago. So we are giving that away. And do we want to go usual rules or do we want them to be creative? I want them to be creative.
You
want
to do... Okay, yeah. Let's have them be creative. That's always a lot more fun in my mind.
As always, follow us on Twitter, whole panel. We'll give our Twitter names at the end. Subscribe on iTunes. And when you leave a 5-star rating in your comment... tell us how you think the fight at the end of the season went down. The more details, the better. Keep it work safe. This is not a Tarantino work, you guys.
I like that. I think that would be a lot of fun.
So, and we will choose the best one. We'll announce it on Twitter in about a week, so you definitely need to be following us. And yeah, once we choose a winner, I will mail this out to you. So... yep. Fire up those creative juices, guys. We want your version of how it should have ended.
Oh, guys.
Yay!
The chat going nuts right now.
Yeah?
For realsy. Everyone's like, dibs. And I'm like, guys, that's not how that works. Guys, you gotta listen to the rules.
The international dibs protocol does not apply.
Not this time around.
Apparently, there's a lot of numbers going on in the chat as well.
2, 4, 1, and 10?
Yes, thank you. I'm like, please, guys, there's too many numbers. I can't do math, okay?
No, that's the numbers in contact.
Well, I'm talking about iTunes and 24110. I gotta just give a shameless plug to the Red vs. Blue Season 13 soundtrack, which is available on iTunes, Google, and Amazon. Mm-hmm. It is, last we checked, number 7 soundtrack on all of iTunes.
That's awesome.
Wow.
And it's like, cannot believe it. I told Nico, I was like, so what's it like to beat out Marty O'Donnell in the Destiny soundtrack? Because he's a huge Marty fan, and he just didn't know what to say to him. He shut down. it was incredible working with David and Nico. I love the, like, working with musicians, and I think it brings so much to the story, and they killed it this season. So please support them. I love those guys.
Yeah, nobody gets Red vs. Blue like Nico does, and mm-hmm. David's been such a great addition to the team. It's been really incredible.
He's super cool.
And I gotta give a credit to Miles, too, is that Miles is so much more collaborative on a music basis, and I think it really shows in the seasons that Miles has directed. Is that, you know, my approach with music before was like, here's our episode, can you make some music for this? Whereas Miles is like, here's what the episode's going to be like. Let's start working on the music. They work on the music, and you build the music and the episodes together. I think it really shows. I think it's a great approach.
It's a lot of fun, too.
Yeah.
Like, it's the thing I need to work on now is actually learning to read music, because I'm really tired of going, no, make it be like,
Nico does a great job of interpreting
my nonsense.
Yeah. Both of our nonsense. He's really talented at translating.
Love you guys.
So yeah, do the thing, buy the stuff. It's such a good soundtrack, you guys. It's wonderful. We have a question from Tumblr user Silvocrent. I don't know if I pronounced that correctly because I've only ever read it. Now that it's been revealed to everyone in the known universe that Chorus has stockpiles of active alien technology and weapons, does that mean the inhabitants might be at risk for war with the UNSC or the Sanghaley Embassy?
That means a lot of things. I'm not at liberty to say.
Yeah.
As I will defer to my last statement, yeah, I The events that take place after that moment in the finale of season 13, who knows what happens after that? You just have to have faith and make your own story.
That's where the fan fiction writers come in.
Yeah.
All right. Do we have any fun stuff on Twitter?
Because we still have a little bit more to cover, but I think questions are good.
We do have. We've got a few. One that caught my eye was from Jonathan Sweet. What made you guys decide to revisit the Great Destroyer myth from season 3 and 4?
The Great Prophecy.
I just thought it was a fun kind of callback.
Yeah, really. people have asked about it so much, too. It's like one of the only storylines, I think, that we kind of just left for a future date. And that future date went from, like, season 4 into season 13.
Yeah.
Touching on.
Yeah, it was just kind of it was one of those things, like, going back and finding Caron and being like, oh, this is a great thing to incorporate into the storyline. It was just another little loose end that I thought that it would be kind of cool to... If you were to look at the Chorus trilogy or the series Revisible as a whole and kind of choose to interpret that great prophecy in one way or another, then it kind of did come to fruition. And I don't know. I just thought it was neat. I don't know. I liked the alien stuff. I thought it was really funny.
And just some more view of that. I think after season 9 and 10, I think we're less likely to do any kind of a season that's a prequel, you know, or have it, like, especially like the back and forth stuff of season 9.
Yeah,
was tough for prequel stuff. But you know, there's, you know, with the anthology that we have coming up, you know, maybe a 2-episode, 3-episode arc or something that's set in the past. Maybe the appetite would be there for that.
Yeah, we've got a bunch of ideas that just take place all over that timeline, and it's gonna be fun getting to play around with that.
Yeah, and you don't have to write a new one. The next book.
Can you give us any clues as to what those ideas are?
You know, Dr. Caboose. MD. He runs the hospital.
Bless.
I could, I would tease one, but it's not my episode, so I'm not going to do it. But it's going to make a bunch of fans really, really happy. I'm gonna keep myself from doing it.
I think there's a lot of stories that, even though we've seen the actual stories, I think that we could do some things that would be a lot of fun, like to show the personal approach, the personal side of some of those stories, you know?
Yeah, so taking a scene that we've seen before, but from the point of view of, like, a different character, or, like, how that character
perhaps. I mean, God, they did that with Ender's Game, they did that with... Did you ever read the Ender's Game?
No, I did what everybody says not to do. I judged the book by its cover. I got that one really lame copy of Ender's Game where it's, like, weird illustrated, but, I was like, I'm not reading that shit.
I did the thing you're not supposed to do. But, I mean, I would like to... there's just some stuff that I think I'd like to see, you know what I mean? I mean, it's like, I always love the meta... And, you know, the knowing more about, like, what Maine went through and what took place from his perspective might be kind of interesting, but we're working through all of that now. And really, it's up to the writers, you know, the stuff that they want to talk about. But, of course, we're going to get some writers who have heard of the series and are interested in participating, but maybe want us to throw some ideas at them. So we're actually building a stockpile of ideas, like, hey, why don't you tackle this?
Yeah. You know?
my head's in here. So we can point it in that direction, because I think there's some things that the audience would love to see, and it'd be interesting to get other people's take on.
I will say I'm confirmed. I'm going to be doing a 3-episode story arc, and I won't necessarily say what it's about, but I do have certain characters that I love and certain characters that I think people would want to know a little more about. So I'll leave it at that.
The big challenge when you have to weave all those stories together, Richard, and it's
I think this is the point where I put in the official request for a 4-7-9er story.
Noted. And we'll add that to the pile.
I think you might need to add like 57 of them to the pile. Because half of Tumblr wants her back.
What's up?
We've got one more from Twitter that I think is interesting, from Malachroma on Twitter.
Malachroma!
She wants to know what initially inspired the dynamic between Felix and Locus. We know you guys said you wanted to have the dynamic flipped, but what initially inspired that to begin with?
I have no idea. I just thought it was cool. That's what inspired it. I really, really, really like villains, because every good villain is the hero of their own story. And I don't know. I think, like, you can't have a good hero without a good villain that is interesting that you have to overcome. So I wanted to just spend a lot of time. Honestly, it was probably just the fact that I wanted to see if I could do something that would could be at least as cool as the meta. Because the meta is just, like, just infamous in all of his horrifying power and strength. And, like, he was just, like, this crazy, like, he said he's an idea at this point. But, like, just, I was like, if I can come up with something half as cool as the meta, I'll be happy.
Well, the I mean, if I recall correctly, 3 years ago, when you were talking about the characters for the first time, a lot of that, you know, I think one of the strongest moments in the series, you don't start from the beginning and work to the end, you start from the end, and you work back to the beginning. And I think the twist that we've been working together was a big thing that kind of inspired, like, where they were, their starting point, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was like an ending point for them in the first act of this whole trilogy.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was like, that, because originally, yeah, the at first they were both going to show up in the canyon, and they were both going to be bad. They were both in green and gray armor. And then, I don't know when it was, but when we were developing the Civil War idea, mm-hmm. the idea of them playing both sides came up, and that was, yeah, that was kind of the, oh, this is how this dynamic needs to work. Like, that, like you said, that twist, then that was where we knew, this is where we wanted to be at some point in time in the trilogy. Let's work backwards from that.
And then that helps you define your starting point
yeah.
for the characters.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point.
Well, I think at this point we need to talk about that finale.
Yeah.
We've hit everything but the final episode.
We do have a question from the live chat, though, really quick.
It's pretty much just everybody is mostly Riss Merritt, who's asking about why you guys decided to pick Tucker out of everybody to have the meta suit out of all the red and blue, red and blues.
Well, I think it fell in line with Tucker's development throughout the trilogy. Of seeing him grow as a person.
It absolutely does. And a development that we have not seen the end of yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like, you know, Tucker, when we talk about the gap with the Great Destroyer storyline, there's a gap where Tucker goes away and then comes back and he actually is a decent soldier. And there's a story there. And I think there's a story left to be told with Tucker and what he does next.
Yeah.
Season 14. Season 14. Let's see what Tucker did in the
all
desert.
All the seasons.
Season 56.
Red versus blue. Forever. 100 years. Red versus blue. 100 years. That's why I'm saying we're going to end in season 5-7.
There will always be more red versus blue. So let's talk about this final episode where we have the chairman showing up at the end of 19 just for a... you surprised. Bet you thought you'd seen the last of me. And dropping mantises pretty much everywhere. And so we have our characters needing to hitch a ride, which I absolutely love, Doc. I've developed a fear of heights and flying and you guys. That's a healthy fear for you. Going up to shut down the mantises from the control hub on the ship. Seeing Phyllis again.
Aww.
Oh my God. God bless you, Mary Cruz.
She's fantastic.
That was absolutely wonderful. And just Phyllis doing the immediate, oh, I missed you. I hate this guy. I will totally help
you. I love the gloss over just like, man, I haven't seen you since you died. It's great to see you. Yeah.
Well, he is church. He's died a couple times.
Yeah, that's true. It must be Tuesday. And just the
Phyllis, though, when you say that, church as a character.
Is he an ideal?
That's
an ideal too.
Without the fact that characters can die, but church as a character, this is not church. This is Epsilon.
It's true. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a difference. The character of church died very actually anticlimactically, like when somebody pushed a button and set off an EMP in season 6. I mean, that's just like, there was no like, I mean, you did have a sacrifice.
Of course.
You could
yeah.
see some kind of, you know, shades of bad that yeah. happened with what, the same mind making the same decisions. Mm-hmm. But it's like, the character really was, is dead. It's
yeah.
just a different version mm-hmm. of the character. It's
yeah.
bad. And I mean, it's a. That's a character that's got, like, multiple iterations. Like,
yeah.
season 9, it's like, multiple.
Yeah, I like thinking of church, Leonard Church, all the churches, like, they're, obviously everybody's destined to die, but the difference between Dr. Leonard Church and Epsilon Church in this instance is, like, the difference between somebody that chose to let go of their past and someone that didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, churches defining, I forget you, I think is such an important moment for Epsilon as a character. It's because you saw what happened to the good doctor, and he just became obsessed with this idea of trying to reclaim what he had lost,
yeah.
and it was awful, and everything was terrible. You have to move forward.
I think I'm going to cry. I'm just going to cry.
I'm just going to cry.
So, So we have essentially a climactic... We don't have essentially a climactic battle. I am losing my mind.
But Phyllis, we have a lot of really good build-up.
We do, and Phyllis bringing them down the hall to the tiny personal freelancer museum, which is super creepy. Oh, my God. Just the moment with Epsilon looking at the shattered Tech's helmet and the voice being an octave down, asking where the chairman is. Just like, oh, God, someone's mad. That's Omega talking right there. That's not going to end well.
And it's it's very fitting. It's very fitting that we kind of end here, because we saw Hargrove earlier in the season in this room looking at the meta armor all menacingly, and so it's very fitting that we end here
with all of these artifacts of a broken project that he's gathered around them as some form of twisted trophy being used against him.
That was before we ever designed his trophy room. There was one thing that I really wanted to be part of the ending, which was he'd collected all of these things and claimed them as his own, but they were never his. If anything, they belonged to the Reds and Blues, and these were items that they had interacted with and had a profound effect on them, and essentially, them reclaiming it for themselves and turning it against him.
Just a politician taking credit for everything.
The Griff shot showing up made me super happy, and the rebuttal for today is a good day to die. Just... yes. And that I didn't even take notes on that last monologue. My notes just say church, and then there's a crying emoticon. This is how you can tell I'm still overwrought. I'm losing my words. Don't usually... Megan, help me.
That monologue, how'd you guys go about, like, in terms of, like... Because he said goodbye without saying goodbye.
I hate you guys the least. He didn't say goodbye. You pointed that out, and I just about fell off the couch.
That line, by the way, Carrie said that to me one time. I don't remember when it was. I couldn't tell you when it was, but he told me that one day, and that is probably one of the greatest things anybody ever told me.
Not that it should be a line. He actually told Miles that.
it was one morning. I think it might have been sometime around RGB 10 or something, or... I just remember there was at one point when we had a tent in the old office that we would go and take naps in because it was like shielded from the light. And,
very mature workplace.
And no, I think it was just like, I can't remember what it was, but we were so tired and drained, and he was just like, I hate everything. And he looked at me, he's like, but I hate you the least. And I was like, thanks, man. And that's been like I think that's the nicest thing anybody's ever told me, and I loved it. And, and it felt like a perfect church line.
It really was. And just
and the one that says about church or Carrie.
That Carrie's low moments are church's high moments.
Maybe, I don't know.
But just pointing out that the hero never knows if their sacrifice made a difference, I don't think that I've ever seen that pointed out in any other media.
That was your idea.
Yeah, it's always a tragic thing to me. It's like you think about the characters that do sacrifice themselves and they just do it. It's like, you know, you never see some kind of in a very typical storyline for like some kind of battle or war movie or something like that, somebody makes a sacrifice and then they go on and win the day, but it's like they just, you don't know that. You set the stuff up.
I always think of the dude from Independence Day. All people have to sacrifice
like Randy Quaid. Randy
Rands the ship or whatever. Yeah, that's the guy I always think of.
Randy Quaid.
I just thought of Halo Reach.
That's amazing.
People are crop duster. Yeah. But the audience thought it was too silly, so they made it for Jet Fighter.
I just thought of Halo Reach. Let him die thinking that he won the war.
I was going to say, we were talking a lot about that when Doyle made his self-sacrifice.
Yeah.
Exactly. And again, it's very fitting that would kind of inspire Epsilon in this way.
And even with this, we have the reappearance of the AI fragments. And I know a lot of people, I'm so sad Church is gone, but Delta's back! Are we sure?
New AI now.
They're all back. Yeah.
Yeah.
God,
it's an interesting idea of just like if Epsilon is memory, and memory to me, like I feel like a person's personality is essentially created by their surroundings, their upbringing, and their experiences and their memories and all that stuff. So it's like if you were to get rid of all of that, then especially if you are memory, like if that's what Epsilon is, if you get rid of that, then it frees up a lot of space for all these like root functions and deltas and, you know, all the other AI to step in and do the thing. So it's...
Yeah, and the iterations of the AI, I think, are something that I'm fascinated by, because, and that's why Epsilon was key to that, memory being key, is that
the memories of things are often a very distilled version of those things. Like, even as you pass down, like, you know, very famous people in history, it's like, you know, Napoleon or Genghis Khan or whoever, you know, or Einstein, it's like, you just get the basis of who they were, you know, you don't get all the other things that make a human mind or a human life what it is. And so, now that Epsilon is gone, and he was the one keeping all of them in check at that point, what we're left with are these memories of these fragments. It's basically like they're very, the core of the core.
Yeah, like Horton's version of them,
So, because that's what survives in memory, right? Is the most, is the strongest, you know, elements of what took place or who those people were. So, yeah, that's interesting because he's not there to keep him in check anymore, you know? Yeah.
I'm worried about
Sigma. A lot of fun stuff to play with there, too. Like, if Epsilon is not there, in that group, what's it like with that group of AI too if they have no memories of anything? Mm-hmm. Like, and they're just like, they're almost like starting fresh themselves. So there's a lot to play with there.
I'm wondering how you'll handle Sigma, because Elijah Wood, I'd imagine he's a hard guy to get in studio.
Now we hang out all the time.
In fact, we're going to meet for coffee after this.
Elijah's always been super, super gracious, so if we ever want to use Sigma again, we'll just have to see. Yeah, we'll just have to see. We just have to ask, you know, and then he'll have to say either yes or no. So.
Sigma will just be a silent, looming, terrifying figure. That's all.
We didn't break Elijah away from his DJing career that he has now. He's a very successful DJ.
Really?
Yeah, he spins records all the time. Loves it. Travels the world doing that stuff.
That's amazing.
Yep.
Fun fact.
Wow. Fun fact. Do we have any other fun stuff from Twitter or from the chat?
I haven't been looking. I've been listening.
I mean, I've also been listening, but mostly everyone's just asking, is Church dead? Like,
yes,
he's dead.
Yeah. Like, okay. Is he ever coming back at all?
Let's go down the list of people who are dead, shall we? Church, and Church. The Meta, Felix, the Counselor, and Sharkface.
Yep, they were just wondering if any of those people are coming back.
Felix
is down. Doyle's down.
Doyle, yes.
Donut Prime.
Texas is gone.
One of the things I'm so happy about, it's like, I like when the things work out. Like, Miles was talking about the 57 thing. Tex died in season 10. She was gone. That was her last season. Texas, the shirts that we made for everybody back in the day, Texas' shirt was number 10. Church's shirt was number 13.
Yeah.
So it's like, the story itself serendipitously worked out to where those numbers, which were just jersey numbers, had a significance by the time they finished. So.
Yeah.
I have to ask if we will be hearing the rest of Church's messages, because in that monologue he said, I'm recording this and others.
Well, you heard one of them in the trailer.
You heard one of those one. I mean, he was working on AI time at that point, right? Yeah. So he could have done a lot.
Theoretically, from the moment the idea popped into his mind, he's like, all right, I'll get this one out of the way, Tucker, take off your helmet. Get this one out of the way. I've always really loved the idea of leaving behind messages for people. Like, that was one of the first things was season 10, episode 12, with the York messages.
Yeah. So
it's a really fun thing to play around with.
No, you did such a great job with that, too. One of the things we actually toyed with, too, was theming the entire Red vs. Blue book as being one of the messages from Church. But that was, like, the book took a year and a half, two years?
We actually had to add some more sections to it because originally, I think we were trying to get it out before season 13 or something, and that just did not happen.
Yeah, so originally it was about before 13, so we couldn't necessarily make it like that.
Yeah.
But it was like one of the ideas, like there's a lot there, you know, that we can hear from Church. Like even some people that didn't get a real goodbye in this from Church, I mean, those opportunities exist in some of those files. So, mm-hmm.
So instead of P.S. I love you, it's P.S. I hate you. Do we have anything from Twitter? I know I just said that, but I'm wondering.
The only thing that somebody mentioned it earlier, you were talking about it on Tumblr, about Felix's end kind of mirroring what was in an earlier vision.
Yes, we have a question from Tumblr user Jero1331. Did you mean to make the scene with the Reds, Blues, and Locusts surrounding Felix to be a mirror to Locust's trial in the temple?
So it started off, as most great things do, as a coincidence, where we were trying to figure out the blocking for that scene, and I was looking around, just running all over the map, like, okay, if he gets hit here, and then the rocket lands him here, and the main reason I wanted him there was just so that Locust could stand high above him, and like, you know, finally taking control of his life. And then when we got all the characters in, I looked at it, and it was just this moment of, oh, fuck me, this is perfect. and then we tried to do our best to get a few shots in there that really mirrored Locus's nightmare. Got to see what Felix's nightmare come to fruition looked like.
It's Miles' way of saying they reused the animation.
So, kind of mirroring that, we have a question from Tyrion Rogue. Now that we know what Felix's fear was, can you tell us how it manifested during Santa's test?
Nah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure it would look very similar to how it turned out in 19.
Wow.
One more. I can't find the name of the person, I'm afraid, unfortunately. But we did have a question from Twitter wondering, from a machinima standpoint, what has been the most difficult thing to work with this season besides just the sheer number of characters in one place together?
Well, so
I thought it was super easy. I thought it was one of the easiest seasons ever for me.
Yeah, Kyle and Josh did a great job leading the machinima along with Alex Leonard.
They did a great job. They did a great job and did it fast because they finished early. First time ever in the history of River Saloon that somebody's finished early.
I told him, like, y'all have to be the fastest machine writers in the world. I don't believe anything else. Especially, like you said, with the amount of characters. Like, episodes 9, 10, and 11, episodes 17, episode 19 and 20, like, anything where there was a huge battle was unreal. But outside of that, there was the episode where Kibble receives the call saying that they just found Santa. We had this caravan of cars that all had to stop at the exact same time. I know Kyle hated me for that. And then the other one is episode 19. Episode 19 is it is all animation composited onto machinima plates.
Yeah.
And the reasoning behind that was, although 343 was gracious enough to give us the geometry for that map, we just did not have the time to create the textures, to light it properly. That time just did not exist. So we came up with this idea, hey, we have the geometry. That means all we have to do is we get our shot in machinima, then the animator takes a look at that shot, or layout artist looks at that shot, positions the camera in the same place in the 3D version of it, and then there you go. Theoretically, it would have worked out great. It didn't work out as smoothly, mainly just because the lens on the machinima camera is so odd and wide.
And positioning a camera in 3D space facing the same exact angle is, I mean, without a reference and actual any kind of hard data, that is very hard to
do. It was really, really, really difficult. And it was probably technically the most challenging episode of the whole season just because of how many different departments had their hands on that episode. Every single shot of that episode. So that was a nightmare. But now we know how to approach it. If we ever do something like that again, we now have a much better way of how to approach it. We know how we can do it. So mm-hmm. Cool learning experience, even if it was like pulling teeth. That's
awesome. Oh, we'll be looking forward to seeing that. Do you have any final thoughts on the season, Megan, Alexis?
Just that as I can understand some people's disappointment at not getting to see the big fight, but all in all, this was a really good way to wrap up a trilogy. And I would have never guessed from the start of season 11 that this is where we end up. And yeah. And as hard as it is to say goodbye to certain characters, this was a fascinating season to watch, just given all the character arcs that we've had, and it was very, very satisfying and entertaining.
It's time to say goodbye to the things we love and the innocence of youth. Yeah, could not resist. Alexis?
No, I was actually going to say the same thing. It's just, I've literally just, like I said before in other episodes, that I've rewatched literally from 1 to now, and it's so awesome, again, to see the change from, I know that the story arcs are a little bit different, but I just love watching and growing and having old fans watching the series again, and it's just, I think this is my favorite season so far, to be honest, even though I know a lot of people are kind of like, oh, but it's so different, but I don't know, I went through the emotions in a totally different way than I would have when I first watched it as a kid. So,
how about you guys? Any final thoughts?
Vernon, you got any final thoughts?
I was extraordinarily happy with the ending. And, you know, I can't thank Miles enough. The last three seasons, I mean, after picking up a series, I mean, he did some stuff in season 10 that was really critical to season 10, but picking up and writing and directing a series that had already been in place for a decade and taking the helm and taking it where you took it, I can't thank you enough. You did such an amazing job.
I think it's absurd that you're thanking me, because it's I was a big fan of the show, and just given the fact that you can give me this opportunity I have no words other than thank you. And it's been It's been very, very challenging, very educational, and a lot of fun. And I don't know. I don't know what's next. I guess I've got the story I want to tell in 14, and then who knows? Who knows what's to come? If it's good, if it's bad, you just have to have faith, I guess.
And ain't that a bitch? I enjoyed the hell out of this season. I enjoyed it more than. I have to say season 8 is my favorite season, hands down, just because that one's so much fun to throw on and watch, but I think this one is probably tying it for that. It's such a good season. It was so much fun to watch. It had such great highs and such horrible feels-killing lows. It was... I do need to sit down at some point and watch the whole thing as a movie, and I'm kind of sad I missed the Alamo thing because of that, because it would be so good to see it all put together. I have not seen a ship sink this hard in years. I'm kind of amazed at the collateral damage and the fallout from that one. And I really enjoyed it. I watched the final episode 2 days ago, and I am still emotionally reeling from that, and that is the sign of a job well done.
Thank you very much. There's a lot of people that worked very, very hard on it, and I'm incredibly proud of all of them and couldn't be more grateful.
Half the questions that wound up on Tumblr had the last line be, thank you to everyone on the RVB crew. You guys are wonderful. We love you. So Tumblr loves you guys. Awesome. And they would like you to know.
Tumblr. No fun, but we love you.
So thanks for joining us tonight. Where can the people go if they would like to find out more?
You can always go to roosterteeth.com for all your latest and greatest Rooster Teeth news. If you want to find me on Twitter, I am MilesLuna24.
I'm at Bernie. But find me on the Rooster Teeth site, roosterteeth.com/Bernie. Is that the way we do it?
Anyway,
just search for Bernie.
Yeah, we updated our site with a bunch of cool new features. You should go check them out.
And more updates are coming. Really cool ones are coming very soon.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having us.
As always, thank you guys.
Yeah, we'll talk to you next time.
See ya.
All right, and Alexis, where can the people find you?
You can find me all over social media as atorres890. Don't forget to check out our sister networks. We'll also be in the booth for Popcorn Talk for movies and Black Hollywood Live for all your news and gossip of African American entertainment.
And Megan?
You guys can follow me on Twitter at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin. I'm also on a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz. And be sure to check out Movie Chick Quick Reviews on Popcorn Talk, as well as the Movie Chick Quick, not Quick, but the Movie Chick News Review Show. There's going to be a new one tomorrow. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're going to be streaming live tomorrow, aren't we?
Yeah, we're going live. It's going to be great.
And I am Katie Cullen. You can find me on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram at Kiaxet. That's K-I-A-X-E-T. You can also find me on Snapchat at Kia Prime. I am on a whole bunch of shows on AfterBuzz. Z Nation has its season premiere next week. Transformers Robots in Disguise has its season finale. X-Ray and Vav will be back eventually, and Arrow's coming back in October. I'm also writing articles for the Movie Chick, that's Chick with 2 Ks, and I'm on that fun movie show, and yeah, come talk to us, guys. We really want to hear what you have to say about this season and about Red versus Blue as a whole. Remember, like, comment, subscribe, follow us on Twitter, give us your version of how that final battle went to win the Bernie Burns autographed name card. Thank you guys so much for watching. See you next season.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Ain't that a bitch?
Whoops, sorry.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.